This is CliffCentral.com. Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life. With Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
Sanbonani, I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is The Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. In studio again today, Kate Pater and our old young favorite, Duncan Mabaso. Welcome to you both.
Hi, everybody.
Hello, hello.
Cool. Today's show is about overcoming adversity. And to demonstrate this, we have in studio a man who tragically lost both his hands when he was just 9 years old. His story is one of defying all odds and becoming a Paralympic gold medalist. Welcome the inspirational Samkelo Khadebe. Welcome to you, Samkelo.
Thank you for having me, Gary.
Cool. You have an incredible zest for life, and I'm sure you'll want to interact with our listeners. So, guys out there, please call us 0861-555-189. Or you can message us on the Cliff Central app. That's a good way of getting through. Or our Twitter handle.
Yes, which is at Hertzlaw, H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W.
Good. So Samkelo Khadebe, Paralympian sprinter. At the last Olympics, Paralympics, something magnificent happened to you and South Africa. Let's take a listen.
And they're away. United States starting strongly in lane 8. South Africa going well in lane 7. Also going well, the Japanese. Now we just hope that nobody messes it up. Off they go, South Africa and the United States. It's South Africa and the United States. The South Africans just had the advantage, as long as all the changes are good. This is Arnou Ferreira for South Africa. It's looking good for South Africa at the moment. Brazil going well though on the inside. Handing over Arnou Ferreira, handing to Oscar Pistorius. And here goes Pistorius. He's in the lead. They won't catch him now. But here comes the Brazilian. But this time, Oscar Pistorius wins it for South Africa. South Africa win the relay in a time of 41.78. A new world record. What a great night for Oscar Pistorius and the South Africans. It's worked out brilliantly for South Africa. And look at the runners. We've got arm amputees. We've got leg amputees. And between them, those four runners, Samkelo Khadebe, Zivan Smith, Arnou Ferreira and Oscar Pistorius have set a new world record.
How was that for you that night?
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal. Samkelo
Khadebe. Wow. Like my heart is pounding. Yeah, you know, the same way it was pounding when I was running the relay. And I mean, I was doing a talk at a primary school yesterday and we played the video. And for some weird reason, I was getting goosebumps because I was worried who was going to win. I mean, I've seen it so many times. I was there. But it's so amazing that every time I hear it or listen to it, it just, you know, surprises me. I still, 4 years later, I still can't find the words to describe the exact feeling that we were going through at that time.
So if we want to pick it up on YouTube, you just go to the men's relay team.
Yeah, 4x100 relay team, yeah. Paralympics, something should come up.
Yeah, it's worth looking at this one.
You have to look at it.
Now, what was happening there was some I think the Brazilians were touch and go with you guys. They were expected to win it, or what was the...
America was the and Brazil.
There? Yeah.
America and Brazil were the ones who were expected to win it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, obviously we had the better team. You know, at
the
end of the day, we had the best team. I mean, like, sometimes I think of it and I think that, you know, God did it on purpose. He was like, you, I'll take both your hands below the elbow. You, I'll take your legs. You know, the other guy is a single leg amputee. The other one is a single hand amputee. You know, so I'm the direct opposite of Oscar and the other single amputees are the direct opposite of each other. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, we gelled so well and the result that came out of it, you know, world record, best team in the world.
How much was the world record beaten by? How many seconds? Do you remember?
No, I don't remember. I know that we smashed it.
Yeah.
That I do know.
Absolutely. Now, the Brazilians, as it turned out, were disqualified, I think, because they didn't, the batons Well, they didn't touch the batons properly. Is that kind of what happened?
So because we don't have hands, thank goodness. Yeah. We can't run with batons, because imagine me holding a baton with both arms.
It's not something I thought
you know,
of.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. So what matters is that we need to make sure that we tag one another, you know, within the yellow lines. Mm. So they did their tag outside the yellow line.
Okay.
So at least we've got one less thing to worry about. There is no baton that's going to be falling out of anybody's hand.
So what's it a question of touching the guy?
You have to touch the next guy.
Okay.
So everything must be done within the changeover zone. So they did it after the changeover zone.
Yeah, Oscar Pistorius said we came out here to break the world record and we smashed it.
We did.
I mean, you had a wonderful team, and Oscar Pistorius obviously rated one of the best in the world. How was your relationship with him?
You know what? When I look back in 2004, you know, when I first met Oscar, you know, I went up to him and I told him, oh my word, you're such an inspiration, and you know, everything you say to a famous person, you know. And he said to me, I've seen you run and you're quite fast. If you work hard at it, you can actually get to the level where I'm at. You know, and I was so surprised by the fact that he's seen me run and he knows I'm fast, you know, so he's noticed me. You know, but I've kept the words that, you know what, if you work hard, you'll be at the same level as me. And I was still young at the time. And I mean, this world record, that is me at the same level as him, achieving the exact same thing as him. You know, so I did take his words with him. And I mean, he's been a motivation throughout.
Yeah, I think what our listeners should do is they should pick up a picture of you. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
So that they can actually see where the amputation happened.
Yeah, because it's below the elbows with me, and it's below the knees with him. Double
Is it exactly in the same space as spot on both arms where you were?
Yeah, it is.
Is that quite? It's quite strange, isn't it? That it was actually.
I don't know. I guess they had to try and make them equal so they don't look weirder than they already look, I guess. You know, because, I mean, it's only the hands that got damaged when I got electrocuted. But, I mean, with time, you know, it got worse and it went up my arm. So they wanted to stop it before it continued throughout the arm.
As I understand, the little I know about athletics, the arms actually play a very significant role in running.
No, absolutely.
How do you overcome that?
Look, the body and the mind have an amazing way of adapting. You know, so as a result of me not having longer arms, you know, I've grown to have massive legs, because now they overcompensate for what the arms cannot do. You know, I mean, we've tried prosthetic hands, I think, in 2011, you know, because we wanted to give me a better advantage because I was losing out, you know, but it just didn't work. You know, someone said to me, you've been without hands from the age of 9. A year before Paralympics, you want to introduce something you haven't had for so many years, it's not going to work out. You know, so I had to ditch those prosthetic arms for running and just continue as I am. You know, I'm like a light feather. I move.
Okay, so Samkelo, let's take you back to the day that your life changed. You were 9 years old. You and your brother and friends, is it, were playing where and what happened to you?
So this is now in Fos Loras, extension 16. And I mean, it was a nice Sunday afternoon. You know, my mother was hosting the society ladies, you know, so it's one of those things. The house is clean. I do not want anyone in my house.
Yes, you know, don't touch my floors with your dirty.
Exactly. You know, so I had to make sure that after I make my lunch, I get out of the house so that she can just do the final touch ups. So the last thing I do remember is actually me making lunch at home and me working up in hospital. But what happened in between is that I somehow ended up with my friends and my brother it's just right next to the main road where one of our friends was selling vegetables, you know. And you know, we came up with a weird game. I don't know who came up with the game. It could be the other guys, but anyway,
it wasn't you.
You know, it wasn't me. I can't remember coming up with a game. You know, so we came up with this game, and the idea was that we're going to take wires from a burnt tire, you know, like it's coiled wires, and we're going to throw them over electric cables. And if you're able to throw it over electric cables, then you win the game. So apparently the first two people tried. Obviously, they were not as competitive and as good as I was, so they couldn't reach it. And when I threw mine, they went over but then got stuck, and they started uncoiling downwards. I don't know whose idea it was that I should go and pull it down, but I went and I pulled it down so that the next person could throw. And that is how I got electrocuted by 11,000 volts of electricity at the age of 9. You know, and I was left there lying down. And, you know, thankfully my brother was there, because he's the one who then ran home to get help. And then I don't know what happened to my friends.
So you were unconscious there, lying where in the felt or whatever.
Yeah, just right next to the main road.
Yeah. You landed up in which hospital?
I was in Natal Spreyd Hospital for a good 9 months.
Oh, wow.
Which means that if I was old enough to make a baby, when I came out of hospital, I would have been a father, and I would have been absent throughout the whole pregnancy. Mm. You know, so the whole 9 months, you know, was me trying to recover from this severe electrocution. Mm. You know, but I mean, we still had a lot of challenges while we were in hospital, you know, because they did tell me that they couldn't save my hands, so they would have to amputate at some point.
How long after the incident did they tell you they were going to amputate?
I think just a few weeks. So it was still in November, because I got electrocuted on the 8th of November.
How did you feel when you heard that they were going to take your arms off?
I couldn't care. Because I couldn't care. The explanation was that, as you can see, every time they do the dressings, it's almost like the meat, the bone, the skin is being eaten away by, I don't know, what was it? Mm. You know, but every time it goes up the arm, it gets worse. It's almost like an infection, which keeps on eating up the arm. So they said they need to stop it by amputating. If they don't, they don't know how far it's going to go up the arm, and it's going to be a serious threat. Mm. You know, I just survived something that I shouldn't have survived, but there's a new threat. So unless they do it, and they do it quickly, they can't guarantee that I will recover.
Yeah.
So then you are left with a choice of take your chances, or let's just be sure, let's amputate, but we know you're going to be alive. So for me, choosing life was more important than taking chances.
Mm. Even at such a young age.
That's quite remarkable,
that sort of foresight.
My goodness, my parents lied to me. The doctor was like, you know what, we need to do this, we need to do it quickly. But as the parents, it is your job to explain it to him.
Yeah.
And then he left. And then my parents were like staring at each other's eyes, what do we do? And I'm sitting there, I'm like, this guy, I was in grade 4. I can already speak and understand English. So he said everything in front of me. I heard everything, and he assumed that I couldn't hear, you know. So my parents were there trying to think, how are we going to break it to him? You know, so I had to make it easy for them. I'm like, did I understand him correctly when he said he needs to amputate to save my life? Mm. And they said, no, he doesn't have to amputate. That's not what he said. And then they looked at each other and was like, that's exactly what's going to happen. You know, and I was like, yeah, let's make it happen. I want to get out of here.
We've got someone on the line who loves you very dearly.
I love a lot of people, yeah, too.
This guy loves you more than most. His name is Ntlantla. Ntlantla, how are you, my friend? How are you?
No, I'm good. Yourself?
What's your connection with our star today?
He's my son.
What? You're not my father?
we're
brothers.
Are you brothers?
Yeah.
Now, were you one of the guys that was there on the day the electrocution happened?
Yeah, I was the ref in that game.
You were the ref?
I was the ref, yes.
Whose idea was this shocking game?
It was his idea.
Oh dear, bastard.
He's throwing half his arms up. He's saying it's
then I opted to be the ref because I didn't trust the game. So yeah, he was offside, then he got electrocuted.
He was offside. Huh? So yeah. Now you were 5 years older, you were 14, what age were you?
Yeah, I think I was somewhere around 14 or 13 at the time.
So now who ran to tell your parents what had happened? Was it you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was me. He was in flames as far as I remember. Then I ran home to look for help.
And he was left lying in the felt, really? There was nothing you could do about it?
Nah, there was nothing I could do. There was nothing I could do because I was also in shock when that incident happened. So the least I could do was to go home and let my mom know, because it wasn't far from home anyway.
So who came back to the scene of the accident?
A couple of neighbors came around. My mom also went there, but I didn't return to the scene. I think at least until he was taken to hospital.
This guy. Well, you never came back for me.
No, what did you
say? Oh, my goodness.
Are after you so only many hearing years, this now?
For the first time ever.
So where did you go? Tladla, where did you go?
No, I was looking from a distance. I didn't go to the scene.
You couldn't see, you couldn't watch this. Your brother burning. You couldn't stand watching
burning.
It.
Sure.
Okay, so you obviously grew up together after your brother's arms were amputated. How was he? How was your brother? Did you do a lot of, did you help him a lot with everything?
Yeah, to be honest, I think that was the difficult part when he came back from the hospital, because he was like born again, literally, because we had to learn living without hands.
Mm.
So it was more or less like baby steps, like one thing at a time. Okay, we used to play marbles like a lot. We couldn't do that anymore. Okay, he was disabled, but I wouldn't say that to him that he was disabled, so I had to be cautious when I was around him. But, well, he made things easy for us, because he accepted the situation. And, yeah, it was easy for everyone else to move forward the way he was.
Did you ever think your brother was going to be a world champion sprinter? And
no,
you're a long jumper, aren't you, as well?
I used to be.
Used to be. Did you think he'd become a world champ?
No, not at all. Because the first time I'm not sure where the competition was. I'm not sure if it was in Devon or something. I think he won like 9 medals or something. I didn't take him seriously, man. I'm like, how can you win 9 medals in your first competition? Mm. It didn't make sense. I think until the second year when he got the national colors, then that's when we started to take him seriously. I started attending his games as well. Yeah, but I didn't think he'd be this big, but I always knew that he had the potential to be.
He's a very humble man. You really are, Samkelo. You're very humble.
Thank you.
You're very nice. And you are a celeb, really. You've got a lot of people that follow you and like you very much.
I don't know. I wish I could be bigger than this and have a bigger reach.
Well, the best part of your story is still to come. What you've achieved,
you're
going to get there. Nislantla, we're going to let you go unless your brother wants to swear at you on air or say anything in particular. No?
Yeah, I do have something. Yeah. It seems like every time we do an interview, something new comes up that I was not even aware of. So thank you for not coming back for me, dude. You could have brought like a bucket of water. You said I was in flames. You could have brought a bucket of water.
Yeah, you could have spat on him
this
as well.
This guy. Oh, you could just... this man.
Yeah.
Hey, unreliable brother, this one.
But in all seriousness, I mean, this was a major accident. As you said, you shouldn't have survived the accident.
No.
So, no. I mean, can you imagine your poor mother, your poor brother running back and literally, I mean, were you on fire?
Yeah, apparently I was on fire. I don't even know why my mother went to the scene, because all she did was just lose her mind when she was there. So she should have stayed home and he probably should have come there.
With some water.
Yeah, with water, a bucket of water.
You'll never let this one go, will you, Sam Keller?
I'm going to see him later this afternoon. He has a lot of explanation to do.
Anyway, thank you for this call, Nklantla. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again. I think what we all want to know, Sam Keller, how do you adjust from being a 9-year-old with hands and arms to nothing, really? How do you...
You know, like he said...
How do you do the basics? Forgive me for being a bit graphic, but...
It's okay. I was talking at a primary school yesterday, and the little kids asked me all sorts of questions from how do you eat? How do you put on your shoes? How do you undress yourself?
Yeah.
And a lot of times I can try and explain things to you, but they won't make sense. I need to demonstrate.
Do you wear prosthetics? Or?
No, I used to. Someone donated prosthetics for me, but... they made me more disabled because, you know, they were so limiting. You know, the movement of the arms was limited. They could only open and close, which means I can only grab things and then put them down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I had to continue learning without hands. You know,
will you take your cell phone out your pocket?
Of course, I can.
Let's have a look how you operate it, because I know you do.
Well,
and it's absolutely fascinating.
And it's a BlackBerry, so it's got like very small buttons. You know, but look, everything I do, if I come across it the first time, I have to find a way around it.
Yeah.
So as a result of my disability, I've had to become more creative as opposed to you. You know, the first thing you're going to do is open your hand and grab and do whatever.
Yeah.
But every single thing that I come across for the first time, I have to find a way around it. I have to find a solution to the problem.
How with stumps are you managing to operate a cell phone? How do you push the letters and the numbers? And I mean, I know this is radio and we can't really...
Yeah.
But Kate, you may want to describe it.
I'm battling to, actually.
Yeah, exactly. See, this is the problem.
It's such an unfamiliar sort of process.
So. I'd like to, if you, with your permission, may we take a picture, tweet it, and let our listeners
see what's
for
going
themselves.
On.
Yeah.
But you see, this is the problem with people with hands. Even if you show it to them, they still can't believe it. You know, so that's why I feel explaining just throws you off even more. You know, but... If I have to show you, you still can't believe it. So now I don't know what to do with people with hands. They are such a problem.
You do make your own calls.
I apologize on behalf of all hand people.
No. You know what? Even with police, when I get stopped by police, you know, I get questioned and interrogated. Who's driving the car? I'm like, but I'm alone in the car. How can you ask me that? They're like, no. How are you driving the car? I'm like, you just stopped me. Nobody got out the car. I'm the person who's driving the car. And they're like, no ways.
When you went for your license, what did they say to you?
Yo, firstly, the entire testing station came to a standstill when I was testing because they thought I was there to accompany somebody.
Yes.
But no, I got in the car and I drove and everybody just stood still. And, you know, like I felt like a hero because, you know, I enjoy the attention. Because I don't have to seek it. It just finds me. I don't have hands, so people will look at me. And I enjoy that.
Mm.
You know, and everyone was just shocked and surprised that this guy, what is this guy here to do? You know, and a lot of people had failed and I passed. And, you know, I walked past them with, you know, my held up high. I'm like, geez, look, people with hands failing like nobody's business. You guys need motivation, man. You know, and the funny thing is that then my license came back and... I kept on getting the A4 paper and not the card because they demanded fingerprints from me. That was a problem.
I mean, these are things you don't think about. So how do you get around fingerprinting?
I can't. You as a person, as an administrator of whatever, you have to apply your mind.
Absolutely.
Unless you want my parents' fingerprints or Nhlanhla's fingerprints, I can help you with fingerprints. You know, I tell you, I spent 8 months with an A4 paper over a fingerprint dispute.
When you don't have a finger.
When I don't have fingers.
Footprints, maybe?
Yes, that's a good one.
But then...
Is everyone's footprints different?
I don't know, but like that doesn't help because then, let's say now I'm a criminal.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go steal in someone's house walking barefoot.
Yeah.
You know, so like toe prints just don't have the same effect. And imagine me... using like, you know, when we do our fingerprint biometrics, there I am taking off my shoes and then you're going to put your thumb there.
Yes.
You know.
Maybe not quite. So what did they do? Did they draft an affidavit saying that they couldn't comply?
First of all, I had to go to a doctor so that the doctor could write me a letter that tells me
that
I don't have hands and therefore
heavens.
I cannot provide fingerprints. And I had to take the letter... to the department, you know, and say, well, look, I know you don't believe me,
but the doctor
now confirms what you can see but cannot believe, you know, and then they were like, I think the doctor is right.
But I mean, it's preposterous.
So then I got my card, and then my card says, no print.
Okay.
Now, what about at school, primary school? So you this terrible accident happened when you were 9. How did you cope there? You know, you were 9, 10, 11 in primary school. Did you pass all right? Did you manage?
Of course, I'm smart. Look, when I got out of hospital, I then went to a disabled school or a school for, how do normal people say it?
Special
a school
needs.
Yeah, you know, as if normal people don't have special needs. But anyway, I went to a special needs school or a disabled school. So much easier for me. So when I got there, I realized that there were so many people who were actually worse than me. So immediately I was at home because I was like, geez, dude, I just lost my hands. But you, no hands from the shoulders. You're far worse than me. So I didn't even get the opportunity to sulk about me losing my hands because immediately, you know, I got in a a situation where I realized that there were people who had it far worse than me. So immediately I was like, I'm that much better. You know, so I never had the time to stress or be depressed and cry about it.
You must be pretty incredible because, I mean, what were you, 10 by the time you were out of hospital?
Yeah, I was 10.
So for a 10-year-old to recognize that actually someone else is having a harder time than they are, and instead of bemoaning the fact that, you know, why did it happen to you, saying, well, you know what, that didn't happen to me, so I'm really lucky. You're obviously quite a formidable somebody.
Yeah, sometimes there's mean people out there, you know. They say, if it didn't happen to you, then who was it supposed to happen to?
Yeah.
You know, so I'm glad it happened to me for whatever reason. I mean, they say everything happens for a reason. I have no idea why I lost my hands.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm going to live every day and make sure that it's to the best. And everything that I approach, I will, you know, attend it to the best of my ability.
So, Mkelo, I'm going to fire a few questions at you. These are some that we've got through on social media, etc.
Really?
The first question is, do you get well paid, or did you get well paid as a Paralympian athlete and a world beater?
Yeah. No, I didn't get paid at all. So what they did was that at the last Paralympics, there was an incentive that if you win a gold medal, a silver and a bronze, there's a certain amount of money that you're going to get. That's not a salary. That's not payment, because then if you come fourth, you get nothing. But you put in the same effort as everyone else who was there. You know, and I was a student at the time, and the bursary at varsity paid for a lot of my expenses. You know, so I realized that, you know what, as soon as I'm out of varsity, who's going to pay for all these expenses?
Mm-hmm.
And as well as we did, I mean, I won a Commonwealth silver medal in the 100 meters. All those things came with no payment, no compensation whatsoever. You know, so no, you are not well paid unless you've got like a lot of sponsors who then want to use you as brand ambassadors. Then you have a better chance.
Except your airfare is paid and your hotels are paid.
Is no, it, all of that is covered, but nothing comes to you.
Nothing comes to you, really. No. Huh? What about the term "amakroko kroko"? Is that derogatory, or how do you see that?
You know what? I like making fun of other disabled people the same way they like making fun of me. I don't know whose idea it was, but it's a horrible name. Because I believe amakroko kroko has to do with either the old age or the broken.
You know,
or
like a wreck.
Yeah, like it's a wreck. You know, so I don't know whose idea it was, you know, especially for a country that's trying to move away from derogatory terms, you know, and they still have a show like amakroko kroko. You know, I was like, it doesn't matter because they show me on TV, so yay.
Yep. Okay, we're going to break now. After the break, when we come back, we've got people who are trying to get through to us that want to speak to you. We'll be right back.
CliffCentral.com.
I patiently waited for you for 9 months. I would sit in my chair and talk about how I longed to meet you. I knew you'd be the most beautiful baby in the world. I was ready for you, but I wasn't ready for this. If you have a child in need of reconstructive surgery, Smile Foundation can help you. Visit www.smilefoundation.co.za or call us on 0861 276 453.
Choice. Sometimes you have it and sometimes you don't. AutoTrader gives you the choice. Now you can shop, compare and buy new cars. Watch our expert video reviews and research before you buy. AutoTrader New Car. The choice is yours.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg with Kate Pater and Duncan Mabussel. Kate,
isn't this man an
inspirational character?
Absolutely.
He's amazing, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all need to get off our asses and stop feeling sorry for ourselves about anything.
Yeah. If you want to Google quickly Samkelo Radebe, R-A-D-E-B-E, please have a look. He's worth looking at.
No relation to Lucas.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Famous name as well. As a 9-year-old, you were electrocuted and you lost your, what do you call it, your hands, your arms? What do you say?
Hands.
Your hands. Okay. Let's, before we take our first caller, there's a message that came in here from a lady who says, I'm a single mother of two adorable boys. I'm kind of homeless. So I thought I'd ask, please, if you be so kind to help, would be much appreciated. Thank you. Good day. Her name is
Mees, I'd say.
Mees. Yeah, Mees. Mees. M-E-E-Z. The only problem with this lady is we don't have her contact details.
Yeah, if she can kindly just send us her contact details, we'll get in touch and see what we can do.
Cool. You can write to...
law@cliffcentral.com.
Perfect.
Fine. We'll pick it up. Okay. Let's... One more question from... Is it Cordwa? The question is, did Oscar do it or not? Could he have...
I'm sure you get asked that a lot, considering everything. Everyone wants to know what he was like, whether he did it.
Well, we know he did it. Well,
yeah, there's no question about the fact that he did it. He didn't deny doing it. It's the question of intention.
Yeah, how was he as a person to
you? He was an inspiration. He was a phenomenal person, you know, and, you know, he's the kind of person who actually cared about other people. You know, I mean, I got so much advice from Oscar Pistorius as an athlete when we traveled together, you know. And I remember just before we ran the relay race, you know, when we were doing our practices, I'm the starter. So when I was doing my last practice of the start, I actually had a false start, you know. And when I had that false start, everybody from the South African team moved away from me in shock. The only person that came to me to calm me down was Oscar. You know, he calmed me down and he told me, look, you've worked for this your whole life. You are now here and all you have to do is just do what you do every day at the training track. Just enjoy, calm down and chase your shadow.
Were you asked by Oscar's team to give evidence in mitigation?
No.
Let's talk to Palesa. Palesa?
Hello?
Hi, Palesa.
Hi.
Do you, you know our guest, Samkelo?
Yes, I've seen him once or twice, but I don't think he's seen me or recognizes me.
Okay. Talk to us about you.
Well, I'm actually inspired by some yellow story. I had a cycling accident in 2014 where the brakes of my bike still failed and I hit the palisade wall. I dislocated my thigh and I broke two ribs, punctured a lung, and I sustained a head injury. Since then, I've been a complete paraplegic, but I'm back into cycling.
Okay, so you're a paraplegic. What kind of work do you do?
I'm a freelance journalist right now.
I think you worked for, didn't you work for ENCA at one time?
I was a week in. I just started my job at ENCA. It was my dream job. I had my accident that week.
You... What do you? I know that according to my researcher, you intend to also. Can you hear me?
A bigger pattern.
You intend as well to do all kinds of sporting activities. What are you looking to do? And maybe Samkelo can give you some advice.
Right now my dream is to take part in the Paralympics. I've taken part in the nationals this year. Managed to win 2 gold medals. And I'm headed off to a World Cup in May.
Fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think it all starts small. I mean, I also started at the national championships, you know, and from then it's like one small international competition to another until you get to the ultimate one being the Paralympics. So you're definitely on the right track.
It is a lot of work. You know, I was listening to you talking about how there's no money, like you don't get any money for all the activities that you do. Instead, you have to raise money to go to the competition.
Yeah,
sure. Absolutely.
I mean, it seems really unfair that that's the kind of system. I mean, you're a South African representative. You know, you've won gold at the Paralympics, and actually it's unpaid.
Yeah, look, I think what I've learned as well is that unless you're on TV, unless you're forever in the media, there's no way of you of attracting sponsorship as well as a person, you know. But also, they don't play disabled athletics, let alone normal people athletics, you know. It's like once on a Saturday and, you know, so it's very difficult for those kind of shows to attract any kind of sponsorships. So the money goes to all the soccer, the cricket and the rugby because it's forever on TV.
Yeah.
You know, and I always felt that we as the athletes did so much more and so much better than, for instance, our national soccer team, because when we go international, we deliver all the time. But very little support, very little financial support, very little coverage.
Palesa, I think we all here want to wish you all the best and well. Hope you do great things. And next time you win something at the Paralympics, please come into studio with us. We're gonna earmark you for that. When is the next one? It's now in Rio, in 2016.
Yes, it's in Rio.
Palesa, were you very active in sort of sports or some kind of athletic field before you had your accident?
Yes, I played hockey, I played soccer, and I did a bit of weightlifting throughout my school life. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So you decided that just because you were in a wheelchair, you weren't actually going to give it all up? Palesa?
Okay. Oh, I think Palesa's done. Okay. We have another caller that we want to talk to and I think wants to talk to you. It's someone you know very well. It's Clive. you know who we're talking about?
Yes.
Clive Doran. Doran. Hi, Clive.
Gary.
Yeah, good to speak to you. You are some Kelo's mentor. What on earth is a sports? What is a mentor? What do you do?
Oh, what do I do? I just entertain some Kelo with his stories. I say my 11,000 walkman.
Hey,
how are you?
Hey, Clive.
Hi to Clayton Duncan also.
Hi. Yeah. Hey. So Duncan surprised. He got a shout out.
Was Clive involved in the 2012 Paralympics with you?
Clive's been involved with me since about 2009. Yeah, 2009.
Yeah.
So he's seen me through a lot of the preparation years until 2013.
What does a mentor actually do in this kind of case? Yeah, let's ask Clive.
Yeah, Clive should answer that one. Yeah.
So, Clive, what is your role really, and how do you get involved, and do you get paid?
So Sam was nominated, or to us by the South African Sports Association for Physically Disabled Athletes. I work for the Sports Science Institute, and we have a project called the Maxfield Maestros Program, and it's under that banner that I do mentoring with Sam, or did. But as you have listened to him, you know, there wasn't much for me to contribute to this young man with his never so dire attitude.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, you know, before I get to that, the one thing that, you know, just blew me out of the water again is when he made that statement of, you know, God had a purpose for him, you know. And it's something that he coined himself. I think it's, you know, he's got a saying that says, I'm inspired by the abilities of my disability.
Sure.
So, you know, that goosebumps. That sums up some Kelo, you know. It's, yeah, never say die. There's all those cliches, but yeah, he really lived up to it.
Yeah.
So Sam and I met late 2009. We try to see each other at least once a month to chat about general things, things that he struggles with, he needs help with, or just bouncing things off me. Or that is what he said, he bounced things off me, but he already had a solution to the problem.
Yeah.
So I think the major things that we spoke about was the balance in life regarding his sport and his studies. And as he mentioned earlier, it was so good listening to him all the time. The situation was not being remunerated for participation. So he realized early enough that, you know, without a dual career, he's not going to have anything to go on with after he finishes his athletics career, which has been really, really an awesome career.
Mm-hmm.
Then we also did life skills, some sessions regarding life skills. And the one thing that stands out to me was when we did goal setting. You know, in about 2009 or early 2010. I mean, he had this dream already that he's going to medal at the Paralympics. And once he has set his mind to something, as you have heard, nothing is going to stop him from that. So,
he looks like a wonderful guy to have mentored because, as you say, he's got most of the answers and he's... He's really a dynamic human being. It's wonderful to be in his company. It really is. And I'm not saying it because he's sitting here. What we haven't told our listeners, and I'm going to break it right now, the man is a qualified attorney. And he's
yes.
Yeah. And isn't that this is a law show, and I look at you and I say, colleague, well done. It's not easy to get there. You had to get your studies through. You had to do your articles. You are now a lawyer, and your life changes completely now. You're going to make people very happy with the with your guidance and your wisdom.
I hope I can, eh? Yeah. Especially young people.
Yeah.
Just on that point, Gary. He had a little bit of a setback as far as his studies are concerned, also. But that didn't deter him, you know. He just said, okay, if I have to do things over but differently, like you said, he has to be more creative than others. It's exactly what he did. And the plus side to that, so when my athletes come to me with contracts nowadays, you know, I refer them to some Kelem.
Well, there you go. That's the kind of mentor you like, one who gives referrals.
Many thanks to you, Clive. You're from the Sports Science Institute, am I right?
That's right.
You guys do big stuff and a lot of good work, and you help people all the time, athletes.
We try to get them to the top, yes, definitely.
Excellent. Amazing. Thank you for that. Let's talk about your law career. The world is at your feet now. I think that people are going to be grabbing you, and what you're doing right now, I think you're holding back your options and you're checking out everything. You can go into commerce, and you can go into private practice, or you could go to the bar, I guess, if you wanted to, and become an advocate. Where are you leaning on this one?
Look, you know, I don't want to be too choosy at the moment. You know, I think I'll go with anything. Firstly, that's just going to pay most of the bills.
Don't sell yourself short. Because
I'm not, but I think that it's important to realize that at this point in time, there's a lot of us, you know, people who just finished articles who are job hunting.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that the choosier you become, you know, the longer it takes for you to actually find something.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, I know where I want to go, but I believe that
what's the ultimate for you in law? Where do you love to
be? Ultimate for me is me practicing in general commercial law, mergers and acquisitions. You know, ultimately, you know, that's what I want to do.
You were with one of the big five or six law firms.
Yes, I was, and I did my articles there, and you know, I had a fantastic time.
Yeah, you must have learned a lot.
A lot.
Were you in mergers and acquisitions?
In my second rotation, I was. So that's what I was doing the whole of last year.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt that it's a field that speaks to more who I am. You know, and I truly, truly enjoyed it. You know, even when I got sick at work. You know, that's how much I loved it. You know, the moment I feel like I'm sneezing, immediately self-medicate so that I don't miss out on work. You know, that's how much I enjoyed what I was doing.
I mean, the obvious question that gets thrown at you is, why did you want to become a lawyer, of all things?
I have a few reasons, I think. I don't know if you'd be comfortable if I was a dentist and you were coming into my office and I didn't have hands.
Yeah.
I think you'd suddenly feel like, you know what, I'm actually fine.
I think I'm going somewhere else.
Yeah, no, you know what, actually, I'm not sick anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I think I also had to be strategic about the career path that I chose. You know, I couldn't just go and do something that required, you know, the delicate, you know, touch of a hand and fingers, you know, so
the brain surgeon is not for you.
I can use the brain, but now I can't make the fingers do, you know, what the brain says, you know, so I had to choose something that still is easy for me. Like, I mean, I'm good with speaking, I think, you know.
Yeah,
so
you're phenomenal with speaking.
Yeah, so I had to do something.
Have you ever done any court work? Have you appeared for anyone, or have you just done
I did a litigation rotation in my first year.
Yeah.
And yeah, you do get a chance to appear if you want to, but I didn't appear. I wasn't interested in that kind
of
law.
Not something that appeals to you terribly.
No. I do like public speaking and motivational speaking. That I love.
Where have you been speaking around the country? I know you speak at schools, and people are trying to get you to motivate them. And
Like you said, a lot of schools. I've done a lot of schools. I've done a lot of organizations when they're hosting the events. I've spoken at a lot of company gatherings as well. You know, and I've recently registered a trust fund because a lot of people do want me to come and speak. But a lot of the times people will tell me, yeah, but we are a nonprofit organization, so we can't pay you. So this and that, you know, so I want to put a trust in place to enable me to actually attend to people who then can't pay me. Because, I mean, if someone is in Cape Town and they tell me we can't pay you, you know, someone has to pay for the flight and the accommodation and the food while I'm there, you know, and can't be me.
What about sports law? Is that not an option for you? You understand the game. You know what a mentor is or a good one.
Yeah, look, ultimately, I mean, at the end, sports law is still contracts, you know. Yeah. So as long as I'm able to get in a commercial firm where we do contracts, then by all means, I will get involved in sports law. I mean, the passion is already there for sports. I do TV presenting for a sports show as well.
Which one is that?
It's called Sports View on SABC 2, you know, so it seems like I do a lot of talking.
Give us some information. When does that go out?
It plays on a Saturday at 10:30 on SABC 2. Yeah, in the morning.
Under what name?
Sports View.
Oh, Sports View.
Yeah.
So you said.
Yes.
So. Excellent.
So, yeah.
So we can pick you up there. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm still in sports, even though I'm not actively running. But, you know, I'm getting more and more involved in sports, but in different fields. So if one day I can end up in sports law, that would be great. I want to push the sports presenting as well. Mm. I don't think there's enough of us out there. Mm. By us, I mean amazing disabled people out there in the media. People do stories about us, but I also want to be the guy that does stories on other people.
Okay, well, next time you can interview me if you like. It's not very interesting.
Shame. No, that's not accurate at all, Gary.
What about your family? Who's been marvelous to you? Anyone you want to thank publicly? This goes.
My goodness, my whole family has been with me from obviously day one.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I grew up with asthma and I struggled with asthma a lot. I've seen my mom cry.
When you became a sprinter, isn't that
Yeah,
amazing?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, for some reason, I couldn't care less, you know, because I was like, look, this asthma is stopping me from being a normal child, you know. So I continued running, even though I had asthma, you know, and then I lost my hands and my mom continued crying. I was like, what did I ever do? You know, but nobody ever left my side. I mean, for the 9 months that I was in hospital, my mom was there every single day. My dad had to hustle for money to make sure that my mom comes to the hospital every single day for 9 months. You know, and when I got home, my siblings were very supportive. To this day, every decision that I make, you know, I bounce it off by the family and I get their support. You know, and I think I'm this strong as well as a person because I don't value other people's opinions, especially if it's negative. If my family says it's okay, go for it, then nothing will stop me.
Yeah, I think through your pursuit of excellence, you're changing the world or you're changing our country. And I think it's wonderful that disabled people can look at you and say, he did it, I can also do it. I think Paless is one of those who phoned in to say, you know, I really admire you. She's been recently paralyzed.
Look,
it's wonderful.
And I mean, it goes just beyond disabled people. You know, I find that normal people find disabled people more motivational, more inspirational, you know. So by all means, that's a platform on its own, you know. So, you know, it's a message that touches everyone, but more so normal people because they're like, geez, we complain about having hands and not having this. But look at you. You don't have hands, but you've done so much. So it usually hits more at home with normal people.
Yeah.
You know, so look, the world is out there and it needs someone to take over.
There's a wonderful quote. It says, everyone is handed adversity in life. We know that. No one's journey is easy. It's how they handle it that makes people unique. And I think that's very true in your case. It's the way you've handled it. And probably one of the worst things that you have heard is, or when you see it, that people feel sorry for you. That repulses you.
Yeah, look, yeah. I had a guy who was brave enough to tell me that people like me are only here in this world to be pitied and shame on me for being disabled. You know, this is when we were really young, you know, and I was so shocked that, you know, somebody was brave enough to say that to anyone, you know. And, you know, every time I achieve something in my life, that guy's words always come back to me. And I'm like, geez, look at where you are in life. You park my car.
And you know, feel sorry for me.
You know. So when we were young, you told me my life was not going to go anywhere because I was disabled. I'm here to be pitied. But today you call me Boza. You know, Boza. And I'm like, geez, dude, I don't know if you remember those words. But every time I achieve something, those words, you know, play in the back of my mind. I'm like, I wish he could see and remember those words, because I'm going so far ahead in life and he's I don't know what he's doing with his life.
I think you should remind him of those words.
Absolutely.
I think rocking up in your car and tossing your car keys to him is probably enough of a reminder.
You know, so...
How were you treated in the office by your colleagues? Fairly? Were you treated with kid gloves? How did they do
it? So here's the thing. When normal people are not exposed to a disabled person, they don't know how to react around you. They don't know how to act around you. You have to teach them. So if I'm going to come here and act all disabled and unable, that is how you're going to treat me.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to put on gloves and treat me like a little kid because I complain. I can't do this. I can't do that. You shape their mind by your behavior. I went there and I showed them that I'm actually capable of more than them. And, you know, you do want to be a topic of respect and not of pity, but you have to earn it. Yeah. You know, so that's, I always make sure that people know how to treat me based on how, you know, I conduct myself around people.
I absolutely love this interview with you. It really is inspirational. And I'm sure there are many people listening that can feel the warmth and the understanding that you and the power that you're giving out today. It's absolutely marvelous. I hope you speak to many people all over the place. And I'd love this podcast to go wild and people to listen to you, because people out there, in whatever it is, they may not be physically disabled, they can be financially disabled, whatever it
absolutely
is.
Absolutely, Gary.
Look, there's a lot of disabilities, man. And
you've suffered financially as well growing up, I'm sure.
Of course, you know. But I mean, still the biggest disability is the mental one, which I think everyone has it. You know, sometimes when I start my talks, I tell people that, you know, when you read the word disabled in a dictionary, it talks about the inability to do something, which then means that if you in your life have ever failed in anything, you are then disabled, just like me. And then people, you'll hear them go, oh, and I'm like, well, unless you've achieved absolutely every single thing, then you're not disabled. But we've all had obstacles. We've all failed in one or two things in life, and we've been unable, you know, to do things. Your attitude can make you disabled.
Sure.
You know, so there's a lot of disabled people, even though they've got all their body parts. There's a lot of disabled people out there, because simply by having a negative attitude, they've rendered themselves disabled, because then they fail to do something.
What about your romantic life? Is there someone special?
Yes, there is a lovely lady in my life. Oh, I love her so much. She's amazing, eh?
Do you want to give us her name? Or
she's my baby. Yeah. She's my love.
Look how coy you get.
I love that girl so much. I love the girl. She's been amazing. And
How long have you known one another?
Does she have a name?
Yeah, she does have a name.
Yeah.
She's my angel. But yeah, it's been over 4.5 years now. I have to pay Lobola next year. My goodness. I don't have cows. So I have to save up money.
Just give them free legal advice.
So come on, everybody. Yeah. Start booking some Kalo for motivational speaking. Yeah, so get him those cows.
You know, or if there's a farmer out there who's like, you know what, I'll give you the actual cows. You know, it's hard being Zulu sometimes and being black, because I have to go pay Lobola.
Yeah. What do you say, Duncan?
I say, look, the man has won a gold medal. He can sum up the money for Lobola, no problem.
He's can't an you attorney. Sell the.
That was 4 years ago.
Where is the gold medal?
It's at home somewhere.
Is it? Yeah. I mean, do you ever put it on and look at yourself in the mirror and say,
no?
That sounds a bit strange. I'm very pleased your answer is no.
I used to, like, a few months after I got it, you know, I would hold it and, like, just not believe that this is mine. You know, but I mean, when I speak to these young kids, a lot of the times I tell them that I've got over 50 gold medals in 10 years of running. But at the end of the day, what matters most is a piece of paper that says that I'm a qualified lawyer.
Yeah.
That is what matters in life. No one is going to hire me on the basis that I was an amazing athlete.
Absolutely. Okay, this has been a marvelous interview.
Moving.
Samkelo Radebe. Absolute joy and pleasure to be in your company.
Thank you for having me here.
Yeah,
it's been a pleasure, yeah.
Jeez, time flies, eh?
We look forward to seeing you as one of the high-powered commercial lawyers.
Hopefully one day.
Yeah, I'm sure you will get there. Yep.
Total inspiration, really and truly. There's absolutely no excuse for anything after sitting in studio with you.
Thank you. I hope you keep it that way forever and not like the New Year's resolutions. Which go on for a couple of months, and then you're like, nah, I'll make another one next year.
Might have to give you a call every couple of months for a reminder.
So the demotivation when it goes, you might call.
Yeah. Dunks?
Look, Gary, at the beginning of the week, it was a really tough week for me. But I just want to say, just being in the presence of Samugelo here has just inspired me just to keep looking up.
Yeah, this is Dale Carnegie said one thing. He said, if you have a lemon, you make a lemonade. And that's what you've done.
Yeah, and I'll continue.
And a very sweet one.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'll continue to do that for as long as I'm able.
Yeah.
And I don't think that I lost my hand so that I could become a gold medalist or a lawyer. I believe that there's more, and I will not stop until I've done something truly great that even I don't believe it.
To our large listenership of lawyers, if you need someone special, he's sitting right in front of me, Samkelo Radebe. Marvelous. What soccer team do you support, quickly, before we let you go?
Kaizer Chiefs.
Dunks, should we kill the show quickly?
Let's kill it now, Gary. Kill it now.
It's okay. It's okay.
I
used to play soccer as well, and I was a goalkeeper. And we lost a lot.
I can understand.
It had nothing to do with me, though.
Did they tell you to stand on your head and play when you were goalkeeper?
No. The defense was not good, which is why it's got a lot of goals. It had nothing to do with my hands. But don't worry, I left the team. I left the team, and they started winning again.
Good. Love you, Mr. Khadeva. We appreciate all you've said to us.
And thank you, really, for having me.
If you've had a personal experience that you'd like to share with us, please come forward. We're there for you. Get us on law@cliffcentral.com. Thanks to you, Kate Duncan, and to our lovely researcher, put a lot of effort into all this, Brigitte Mayer. Thank you to her. And that's it for today. Until next Tuesday, 12 noon, I'm Gary Hertzberg.
This is cliffcentral.com.